Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world.
Hello, welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. It is Thursday, December 2nd. I'm Jessica Steinberg. Before we get started, a quick reminder about Streetwise Hebrew for the Times of Israel community, our bite-sized audio Hebrew classes. I'm joined today by political reporter Tal Schneider and diplomatic correspondent Laser Berman. Hello to you both.
Hi, Jessica.
Morning.
So today we're going to talk about nuclear talks in Vienna, Foreign Minister Yair Lapid's three-day visit to the UK and France, and Tal's analysis of Israeli President Isaac Herzog. Let's start with the nuclear talks, which began on Monday. Where do we stand now in these talks that seems to be a debate whether how useful they're going to be? Laser, do you want to get us started on that?
Sure. So just to remind our readers that this is the seventh round of talks in this attempt to find a way back to the 2015 JCPOA nuclear deal, try to find a way back for both the United States and Iran. I'll remind you that in 2018, President Donald Trump pulled out of the 2015 deal. And about a year later, the Iranians started systematically and very publicly progressing with their nuclear program on a number of fronts and violating the terms of the deal, saying that if the U.S. had backed out, they're no longer bound by its terms. There were six rounds of talks that ended almost 6 months ago. And then there was this hiatus. And in that hiatus, we had hardline President Ibrahim Raisi elected. And there were expectations that we'd get back to the talks much earlier than that. And it became quite worrying as Iran continued to progress in its nuclear program, enriching uranium, working on uranium metal and some other components that they would need for a nuclear bomb. And they weren't coming back to talks. Finally, late in November, they come back to talks. And I must say that the expectations are not very high. There's not even experts and officials aren't even sure that the JCPOA is worth going back to since it starts to expire in 2025 and 2031, and that Iran has progressed so much in its nuclear program that the deal might not even be relevant anymore and might not even be useful. I will say, however, after the first day, there was some signs of optimism from both the Iranians and from European officials saying that the Iranians are taking some very hard-line positions, but they were willing to talk about enrichment itself and not only the removal of sanctions. So I think expectations are quite low, but there have been some positive signs for those who want to see a return to the deal. But I would say the chances of going back to the 2015 nuclear deal are much less than even. And if not that, then what comes next? A new deal will take a long, long time to hash out. And in that time, Iran will continue to enrich and continue to progress. And the plan B, it's not even sure what that would look like, whether new sanctions would do anything, whether anyone believes that there is a credible military option out there. So things remain tense. And this round should be wrapping up today, and then we'll know a little bit more about whether there'll be another round and what Iran's positions are.
Tal?
Yeah, there were some intel reports here in Israel that Iran was taking technical steps to prepare for a 90% enrichment, which will get them, to the very dangerous level. Obviously, if they're nuclear plan is only for, peace purposes, only for electricity. It doesn't need to go, far beyond 20%, and they're already enriching 60%. So, all of those reports are shedding more, more arguments, because the Iranians, if you listen to what they say, they claim that this is coming only, the reports in Israel are coming only to halt the discussions, and the IAEA, on the other hand, taking things seriously and wants to, ramp up the presence of inspectors in Iran. And other than what Laser just said, we don't see real results at the moment for the talks. I don't know. What will come next.
Right. And of course, Israel wasn't at the talks, clearly, but Foreign Minister Lapid was in the UK and France this week for a three-day visit. So my first thought was, as I was reading through the various pieces and reading about his conversations, did he place himself in Europe, sort of close to Vienna, to at least be able to make sure that Israel's voice was heard, in a sense, through these other countries, Laser?
Sure, and I think you really do frame that well. Israel is not, of course, party to the talks and not part of the P5+1. And in the past, under Benjamin Netanyahu, they were really in no way part of the talks at all. Netanyahu took a very confrontational and openly hostile stance to the talks, and he tried to influence it through public opinion, through his connections to some more sympathetic countries. But he was really, Israel was really not collaborating with the parties at the talks. This time it's different. You see a very different approach from the Bennett/Lapid government. And that is certainly why he was in London and in Paris this week. I will just say that I was supposed to be there with the foreign minister, but because of the COVID concerns, they did not take journalists along. But you can really see an openness to hearing Israel's opinion, to hearing Israel's concerns. And I think there's some real nervousness about what a plan B would look like. And there seems to be a real openness on the part of Boris Johnson and UK Foreign Secretary Liz Truss, and of course, Emmanuel Macron of France, to hear what Israel wants to see in a plan B and what Israel can offer. I have a piece coming up today that is an analysis of Lapid's trip. And it says that Lapid came to the UK at kind of a fortunate time for him. Israel's stock is really quite high, and media coverage has been quite positive about Israel recently because of their successes with COVID. Boris Johnson has had a rough month, and the fact that he's able to point at a coming free trade agreement with Israel is really a boost for him in the wake of Brexit and the UK's inability to sign any real marquee free trade deals. And in France, Lapid and Macron have a very warm personal relationship that goes back several years. In 2017, Lapid made the unusual step of endorsing Macron for president, and Macron seemed to return the favor unofficially in 2019, only 4 days before Israel's election. He hosted Lapid in Paris and seemed to endorse him in the Israeli election against Benjamin Netanyahu. So there's a real openness to what Israel has to say. And this is a different sort of approach than Netanyahu had, and it'll be tested in the coming weeks and months. It might be that it turns out that they will have been seen as too quiet and did not sound the alarm, or it might be that this more collaborative, this more cooperative approach that is being put forth here is really able to increase Israel's influence over the talks. So this new approach will really be tested as the talks move forward, or if they don't move forward.
I mean, obviously there is this warm relationship for Lapid with these two leaders. Is it still unusual, though, for in essence, a foreign minister to be meeting with prime ministers of each of these two countries?
Yeah, actually it is well established that Macron does not meet dignitaries that are not on his level of, you know, heads of state. And it's very unusual to meet a foreign affairs minister, you know, on behalf of the president. However, Lapid is also the alternate prime minister and the next prime minister. So, I do agree with the warm relationship where Macron took the step of meeting Lapid a couple of days before the election. That was very rare back in 2019. And as per Johnson, by the way, Lapid just posted the other day a photo on Instagram, a photo he didn't post on Facebook and Twitter for some reason, and he didn't send reporters, of him and Johnson sitting together in a friendly kind of hugging atmosphere back in 2003, apparently.
Wow, a long time ago, right?
Yeah, I mean, Johnson was not even the mayor yet. He was just a former MP from Henley. And Lapid was an author and, screenwriter and a columnist. Yeah.
So they go way back.
By the way, and chief executive editor of The Spectator. And they were friends. You know, they show like this friendly photo of those two conservative right-wing, kind of centric right-wing, you know, aspiring politicians. But that's funny. It's like 17 years back. Funny.
Wow. Laser, did you want to say something about that?
Yes. I would just also say that it's clear and everyone understands that Lapid is taking the lead on foreign policy, and they he speaks for the government. And I think it, no one is surprised that senior leaders in Europe are meeting with Lapid and are treating him as the prime mover of foreign policy. And they understand that Bennett and Lapid are very closely coordinated on this issue.
Okay. Yeah, very interesting to sort of watch that all unfolding. Tal, you have a piece in Zman Yisrael on the Hebrew site, which is going to be up in English on Times of Israel, an analysis of our still fairly new president, Isaac Herzog. What were you looking for? What did you find?
Yeah, it's six months into his election as president. And in the last couple of weeks, Herzog has really taken up his diplomatic portfolio, I would say, with heavy involvement in the Turkish affair, where he helped to release the two Israelis that were, you know, taken into arrest in Turkey, using his personal connection with Erdogan. He also had a very interesting conversation with Xi, the president of China. A 40 minutes phone call where, you know, she did not talk yet to Israel's prime minister, the head of the Israel's executive branch. He actually took the time to talk to Herzog. They're not parallel in their, stance. So that was interesting. And he also managed to, lower down the tension in the Western Wall, promising all the different Israel's conservative reforms and ultra-Orthodox, promising them to meet and talk about the arrangement or a solution in the Western Wall. So, you know, all of those three events took place in just over a couple of weeks. And I thought that, you know, comparing to the former president, Rivlin, it is very interesting because Herzog came into this office promising that he will be the first social worker of the country, having been Israel's former welfare minister a couple of years back. And his intention were definitely, you know, his eyes were put on the social rift and inner Israelis problem. But, you know, if you look 6 months into the job, you know, definitely the government, who is a fresh and very peculiar government, needs him to be more in the front of world affairs using his connections. The piece is written in Hebrew, but is translated into English and will be up on Times of Israel website in English pretty soon. So if you want to look into former president, current president, and what the future entails, because Herzog is, he will be on his seat for 7 years. And I think maybe presidents and prime ministers, they think of Bennett 2 years terms and then Lapid 2 years terms is something short. So.
Right. Laser, just I'm curious in terms of the diplomatic coverage, what are your thoughts about Herzog and what he has been delving into for the last 6 months?
Sure. The only thing I would have to add to Tal's wonderful story is that sometimes it's more comfortable to speak with the head of state and not the head of government. And I think for China, that was certainly the case, that China is well aware of what Herzog's role is. And in some ways, it's can be more comfortable at times and more convenient to speak to someone who's not seen or not supposed to be a political figure. And it might be a statement as well there. So he certainly has a role. He's certainly going to pursue that role. And I think the really interesting point that I heard from Tal was that he's going to be in office for a long time, and who knows how many governments will go back and forth in that time. So
right.
So it is certainly assertive international role in relation with his predecessor.
And Laser, where are you driving to at this hour of the morning?
I am actually on my day off, so I don't know what it says about me that I'm spending it doing a podcast, but I'm happy to. I am driving up north. I'm heading down toward the Jordan Valley. Then I'm going to hang a hard left, pick up my kibbutz brother, and then we're going to do some walking up near the Meron region up in the Galilee. So I am
very
looking
nice
forward to the day. It's beautiful weather, and you'll have me at full strength next week.
Excellent. I thank both of you for being with us today on The Daily Briefing. Thanks, Tal. Thanks, Laser. Wishing everyone a Chanukah Sameach, and a reminder to sign up for Streetwise Hebrew by becoming a member of the Times of Israel community at our website. And just reminding everyone that Times Will Tell, our weekly feature, comes out tomorrow, Friday, and we'll be back with The Daily Briefings on Sunday. Have a good day, everyone.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from the Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And of course, on thetimesofisrael.com.